At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
All right, Dr. Tom, I think it's time that we introduce the world to the first podcast that is going to bring gold-blooded energy to the world. Ladies and gentlemen, I, Daniel Hardy, present to you Dr. Tom. How you doing, brother?
Oh, I'm doing quite good. How are you doing, oh, gold-blooded king?
You know, I'm doing pretty good, man. I'm doing pretty swell. Obviously, knocking off the Clippers first round took a little longer than I expected, but anytime you advance out of the first round, especially being a Warriors fan, I mean, there were so many years we couldn't even get into the playoffs. You know what I mean? So,
just being in the first round would be a feel like a championship. Yeah. So, like, you have to appreciate the where you've been and where you are
absolutely,
now.
Absolutely, and where we are right now, second round, quick turnaround, heading back to the friendly confines of Oracle. Now, quick question. Did you expect it to be that hard to knock the Clippers out?
No, but as it happened, I became less surprised because you just saw the way that team, that they're so tenacious and scrappy, and I hate to give Doc Rivers credit, but he coached them up well, and they just had players who bothered the Warriors in certain ways that made it difficult. So as it went along, you started to say, oh no, I could see this was going to be one of those first round series that would go longer than you think, even though there's clearly a sort of a talent disadvantage or differential between the Clippers and the Warriors. So, I think the game two loss was the one where it's like, okay, this might go a little longer than I expected. One loss, that'll happen. But two, I was like, oh, wow,
right,
that's
right,
interesting.
Right. I guess I figured we had a 31-point lead game two, but Boogie Cousins goes down and you're kind of thinking, well, this should be an easy win, but the emotional loss of you losing such a big guy was pretty sucky. You know what? Honestly, I'm getting a little upset. I'm getting a little angry, Tom. And this is why I'm getting angry, Dr. Tom. This is why. Because...
Oh, lay it on me.
I'm trying to be all politically correct and all that stuff and talk about the Clippers. Look. I don't even care about the Clippers. They were going to lose regardless. Let's talk about the Houston Rockets. Let's get serious for a second because they've been yapping, yap, for a very long time. And now they finally get what they want. Now, I'm sure you're familiar with the Houston Rockets. We've been playing them for a long time. If you recall, back in 2015, Harden said that he was the real MVP and not Steph Curry. That's weird. And when they had a chance to meet in the playoffs, they were dispatched in five games with Harden having the NBA playoff record 13 turnovers in the final game. Now, Dr. Tom, in 2016, can you tell me what happened then?
The Rockets, we dispatched them again in five games, though this time this was in the first round. Curry suffered ankle injuries in game one and a MCL sprain, and I believe that was game four, and only played in two games in that series. And it's pretty, shocking given what you hear from some of the delightful people in the city of Houston, fans of the Rockets, that a team could win without their star point guard. I know, right? Like, it's hard to believe, but somehow the Warriors did it, and I didn't hear a lot of complaining. I think it was just, okay, let's just take care of business. Now, mm-hmm. It'd be nice if some other fans and other teams held themselves up to that standard, but that far be it from me to tell other people what to do.
Okay, so what you're saying is, not only did the Warriors eliminate James Harden's Rockets two straight years, they were able to do it in the second year without the services of their star future Hall of Fame point guard. That's crazy. It's amazing how that happens. Yeah.
The future Hall of Fame star point guard who just won the first unanimous MVP and had the greatest season in the history of basketball seasons, perhaps. And they still found a way to win.
Right.
I mean, like I said, I thought that if your point guard went out, that meant that, you know, you had to lose. At least that's what the equation is. We hear about a little further down the road.
Right, right. Well, I guess that's 2 years. That's 2015, 2016. And then in 2017, there was that epic collapse where James Harden playing a Kawhi-less San Antonio Spurs team at home in game six has his worst playoff performance ever. I mean, now, I do wonder, when Stephen A. Smith gets on First Take and says, was James Harden drugs? At that point, did people start wondering, hey, maybe James Harden just isn't built for the playoffs? Like, at a certain point, you got to take the evidence you see and say, hey, this guy keeps failing in the worst possible ways in the playoffs year after year after year. In fact, we were supposed to play them, but because they couldn't get the job done, we ended up, you know, scraping away the Kawhi injured Spurs.
And in that closeout game that you reminded me of, the Spurs were without Kawhi Leonard, and it was in Houston, and they still lost. That was going to set up that this third year in a row, and the Rockets, that was the first year with D'Antoni,
right.
And they looked good in the regular season. This might start to become a theme here, whether it was the mileage that Mike D'Antoni put on James Harden, whether it's James Harden's game and how it fits into the playoff basketball. When somebody is wondering if you're on drugs or not, and that's like why you're playing, like there's something's that's big. That's very big.
Right. Right. Do you remember what happened last year?
Vaguely, just a little bit. I mean, thinking back on 2017 and that kind of collapse, I can understand why a team would be so so desperate to turn to Chris Paul, the perennial can't get to the conference finals player.
CP3?
I never set foot in them until last year. So, you know, good for him. I'm glad he finally got over that hump.
Dr. Tom, you are a very, very mean man, Dr. Tom. You're a mean man.
we have a few mean men over at Golden State of Mind. At least that's what I've been told. but we met in the conference finals, and yes, Chris Paul and those hamstrings that racked up more miles than a 1978 Buick, I don't know what, finally gave out. That's what your everyday Houston fan will point to in terms of, oh, this is why the Warriors won the series. Well, I mean, first of all, the Warriors were also without Andre Iguodala for the last part of that series, including a couple of wins for the Rockets. And there was a very, have my issues at times with the fancy schmancy statistics when it comes to basketball, but
right.
Per Second Spectrum, Andre Iguodala, who missed after game three of that series, held Paul and Harden to a combined 1-for-41 shooting during.
Wait a minute. You're telling me that Andre Iguodala held two future Hall of Famers to 1-for-41 shooting in the playoffs?
I believe that's what it says. I'm not here to make things up.
So if that guy who's literally holding them combined to 1-for-41 goes down with an injury, I guess that maybe could shape the outcome of that series.
I mean, in theory, if you watch basketball or care about such things as defense, which I know Mike D'Antoni doesn't, you have to be on, you know, that's the sacrifice you have to make, but to people who watched it closely, you knew, yes, the absence of Iguodala was, in terms of how the Warriors want to play, what made them play their best against this team, he's a part of it. And so he's not there. So that's was a big loss. And yet the Warriors still found a way to win the series.
Still got the job done.
And yeah. And if this is the other thing in that series I keep coming back to, is that they were up by how much in game six and seven, I don't care if you're down one very important player, maybe the most important player. If you're up that big and you let especially in that game six, when the Warriors ended up winning by a, I can't remember, but a ton, that's not just the absence of one player. That is other things going on. And right. So trying to reduce it to just, oh, we didn't have Chris Paul, like that does not tell the whole story. And that's being very reductive.
I'm just glad to hear someone just bring some facts to the situation, because we all have our emotions. It's okay. You have how you feel. I have how I feel. That's okay. But sometimes you got to bring out some facts and just say, hey, maybe the Houston Rockets have a history of not getting the job done, especially when it comes to the Golden State Warriors. And that's okay. I mean, you're in the time of a dynasty. If you look at the New York Knicks from the early 90s, I'm sure their fans were like, oh my God, if only, you know, Michael Jordan didn't exist, we'd have like 10 championships. But Michael Jordan did exist. So just take your L's and keep it moving.
I hate to say it, they're one of my favorite non-Warriors teams, but the early 2000s San Antonio Spurs, you know, they could probably say, well, we'd have even more titles if it wasn't for Shaq and Kobe and those Laker teams.
Right.
Well, they were there, and they just, you know, the regular season, the playoffs, they just pretty consistently had their number.
Yeah.
And it's just how it is.
It's just how it is, you know? Which brings us to this year, which... the Warriors actually signed somebody in the offseason named DeMarcus Cousins.
I've heard of him. I don't know if he's any good. I see some people commenting on how he fits in this team and try to spin it in a negative way. But
right.
Tell me a little more about this DeMarcus Cousins.
Well, he's a giant. and he was, you know, before his Achilles injury, he was kind of known as the best center in basketball, especially on the offensive end. And the last time he played the Houston Rockets earlier this season, he had his best game of the year when he scored 27 points and flirted with a triple-double with 8 rebounds and 7 assists. Now,
well, triple-double, that's the most important thing in basketball.
I know, he almost got it. Darn it. So I just feel like, you know, although obviously – the Rockets would target him in the pick and roll, et cetera, et cetera. The last time he was on the court, he was just busting their ass. So I'm assuming a guy who can clearly get 27, 8, and 7 being out, I think we already have our built-in excuse for if we don't win this series, because according to the Rockets fans, if one of your star players is hurt, therefore you can't possibly be held liable for losing the series. So I think we should just pencil ourselves in for the 2019 imaginary NBA championship because one of our players got hurt.
I think that only works for every other team, just not the Warriors. The Warriors, it's, you know, you have to, you got, you, injury is no excuse. There can't be anything. It's just a character indictment on the team and the players and the coach and everything. No injuries. Everyone else, they can say, well, we didn't have this player or that player, but the Warriors, we can never do that, at least in the eyes of some.
Right. And I think that's the burden of a dynasty. You know, you can't settle for the excuses that everyone else comes up with because you actually get the championships, you know? So I get it. It's all good. We either have excuses or championships. I'd rather have championships. It's all good. But I will say that I am a little concerned with, Steph and Klay both suffering some relatively serious ankle injuries in the last game against the Clippers. Although they're slated to play in game one, there's still some question. Mm-hmm. In fact, they are questionable for those games. So I do wonder if Steph Curry and Klay Thompson are at all limited. Do we have anybody else on the team who can go for 50?
I don't know. There's this he doesn't want to shoot. Kevin something.
Kevin Looney.
He's only passing. Yeah. Oh, well, he could go for 50. Oh wait, no, that's stop the Rockets from scoring. I don't know what, because he's a great pick and roll defender. There is this one guy, they signed him a couple years ago, Kevin Durant. He's depends on who you ask. Some people will say he's, you know, one of the best players in the game. Other people will say, well, he's just a ball hog, and anytime the Warriors don't play well, it's because they're catering to him, and he can never win a championship. You know, because of him, it's always because of everybody else. But I think even if Steph and Klay are limited or hobbled in some way, though, it seems like of the two, Clay, it's the more serious. But after watching game one of the 2018 finals, when J.R. Smith tried to tear out his leg and he still played, I will be surprised if Clay doesn't play. But with all that said, it's nice to know that, oh, there's this 7-footer who has handles like a guard and is in an incredible rhythm right now, who can go out and get those points,
right,
and hang 50 on a tenacious Clippers defensive team that played with a great tenacity. And so imagine what he could do against, you know, I don't know what the nice way to describe the Rockets defense is.
Oh, come on. Wait a minute. The Rockets led by the tuck wagon, you know?
Where's the Trevor Ariza was the key, that he was the best Durant defender. That was the player they could put on Durant, and they did it in 2018, and he could have an effect on his game. They let him walk. Yes, the tuck wagon, PJ Tucker, my biases, as I think most people know, that I'm a University of Texas alum, Hook'em Horns. So I've got a lot of respect for Tucker, PJ Tucker, but also he's one of my favorite non-Warrior players. He's definitely the player on the Rockets that I have the most respect for and kind of say, okay, that's a guy that can really play, but he can only do so much. And it's not like Durant is the only player, and there are definitely things Durant can do that a PJ can't handle. So even though I do think, you know, I jokingly took, I'm going to take some shots at the Rockets defense, but I think that this is where not having Trevor Ariza, I just look at the rest of the Rockets and I say, who is that going to be that wing defender on KD? And I don't see it. I really don't see it.
I mean, neither do I, obviously, but I will say this. I do feel like the Rockets have a unique way of forcing the Warriors to play outside of that motion offense Steve Kerr loves so much. The Rockets have a great way of making you isolate. I mean, they switch everything and, you know, they will kind of lull you into that one-on-one ball, which I think has cost the Warriors a couple of times playing them, because they want to go back at them. Like when you see James Harden pounding the air out of the ball, you know, traveling, flopping, you kind of want to just get him back. You know what I mean? Like playground style. But that's not the best way that the Warriors play basketball. Yeah. So I wonder if, in addition to some of the physical matchups there, that the Rockets can throw with, you know, yeah, Capella, big fella, protect the rim, Tucker, versatile. And James Harden's defense is not just complete trash anymore. He will actually give some effort. So you got to give him credit for that. But at the same time, I do wonder if this game is going to boil down, or the series is going to boil down to the Warriors keeping their focus in light of that high-speed chicanery tomfoolery, the style the Rockets play, where, you know, they're going to get the refs involved because they're going to be flopping all over the place and they're going to be shooting hella threes. So it's kind of like it's like a funky basketball style. Like no one else really plays like the Rockets.
Yeah. So two things. One, so if Harden's defense is a complete trash, is it like the little trash can you keep in the bathroom where you throw, like, you know, Kleenex and stuff like that?
I actually just bought one of those, so I'm very familiar with that.
So it's like, but also I think you're right, and I think that about the what the Rockets, their defense, one of their defensive elements is to force the Warriors into that, especially with Durant, into that isolation heavy style where it's KD in the post and then you sort of, they'll throw the double team at him. You saw this a lot in games 4 and 5 of last year's Western Conference Finals. One of the things that I think might be a little different, and you saw this down the stretch of this season, is during when that stretch towards the end of the regular season where Durant wasn't shooting as much, but was as Marcus Thompson called him, right, he was point KD, where he was racking up the assist numbers. He was getting better about when he had the ball, like in the post, and he was isolated. and that double team came, he was doing a lot better and seeing, oh, there's the open man, and he would get it to him. And that's something, that's the way the Rockets defend him, and that's the one thing he can do to counter it. And he showed us all that he's got that move and he can do that. And so that's the thing that makes me think, okay, this thing they did last season that had some effect and helped keep them in that series, Durant might have kind of added that tool to effectively counter it.
Right, I can dig that. Now, I don't know how many minutes we've been talking, but it seems like at least half of it, Kevin Durant has been the focal point. And clearly he's been the focal point of probably the entire NBA this season. I mean, every time you turn on, one of those talk shows or you go on Twitter or something like that, someone has something to say about KD, which is fascinating because oftentimes KD isn't a really talkative guy with the media as far as pushing his brand and things of that nature. He's kind of a chill guy who loves to hoop. As his Twitter says, I mean, I do me, so my question is.
I chill.
What do you think it is about Kevin Durant that's causing such a global media firestorm around him? I mean, we know. You should know firsthand about the Twitter wars that are going on over this man right now. For a pretty quiet guy, what do you think that noise is about, and what do you feel is going on with that dynamic?
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I mean, there are a lot of things in play. He's obviously he's a great player in the NBA, and his, he will be on the open market this year. So that's interesting. And that could potentially have if he changes teams, have an enormous effect on the league. What teams are good, what teams aren't good. I think that, you brought up his kind of quiet, more reserved, more what have you nature. And I think that allows people, whether in the media or just sort of observers, people who, voices who talk about or follow the team, to project and to really kind of interpret in a way that is just based on sort of very outside perception, and reading too much into things, reading, the smallest things as being, it's like they're, and I have a great deal of, this is kind of what I do, but it's like they're reading a novel and like saying, oh, when this character does this, this is the author kind of commenting on blank. And they're kind of, that's like what they're kind of doing with Durant. And as I've learned and know, you can't apply those things to real life because it's not a narrative in that way. And people are people and there are different things going on. And so I think that's a lot of it too. And it's, and a lot of it is whether it's clicks or subscribes or views or likes or what have you. I think that's part of it too. It's just to people wanting to comment for the sake of commenting, and because people, because unfortunately it's like a human trait that we all love gossip and we all love the whispers and we all love conjecture and backroom intrigue and all this kind of stuff. And so as people can tap into that and engage with that and turn an NBA player and a story of a season into something out of, some melodrama, they're going to do that because maybe it's more interesting. Maybe it's fulfilling that kind of desire that's in kind of latent in all of us or most of us. I don't know. I think it's a lot of things, but I think that it's a lot of it is that, because KD is quiet, is a little mercurial, that he, in I don't want to say invites it because that's not fair, but it leads to that. And then it's like a snowball and it just picks up and gets bigger and bigger and more and more.
I mean, me personally, being a guy who watches Game of Thrones, I can definitely understand, you know, the concept of, you know, pulling the most drama out of what you're watching. You know, that's as human beings what we like. But also as a Warriors fan and someone who remembers going to games, you know, for the, it was like the family four pack, you know, like, you know, $100.
Chris Mullin buzz cut night. That's the one I always remember.
I remember just praying for one day that we could have a team that could fight for an eighth seed. And now that we've kind of, you know, taken over the league, the only speculation I have about Kevin Durant is how many points he's going to drop on someone's head, because, you know, nothing's promised to us. And as Warriors fans, we should be the most grateful and the most appreciative of a guy who came from somewhere else just to be a part of what we're doing and has taken over as a part of the leading force for us. So this guy right here, I can't speak for him as to what he's going to do. And I wouldn't do so because he's a grown man. You know, he's got things on his mind, he's got a family, you know, you know, whatever. So, but what I do care about is the fact that Michael Jordan, arguably the greatest player of all time, won 6 rings, you know? Kobe Bryant won 5 rings. Tim Duncan, 5 rings. Shaq, 4 rings. And these are like the most dominant forces we've seen. I mean, look at Hakeem Olajuwon. Super, super amazing player. 2 rings. So I'm looking at the legacy. And as a Warriors fan, I just want us to get as many championships as possible because I know it's hard. I know it's difficult. And so I would rather spend more time speculating, like, can we get these jabronis out of here as fast as possible and get this three-peat? You know what I mean? Because that's the most important thing to me.
Yeah, it's funny. There's a quote. It's attributed to the screenwriter William Goldman, who is famously a Knicks fan, which is the great irony of all this. But there's a quote he said that's like, it's nobody knows anything.
Right.
And I think there's that. And just thinking about what you said, where you said, you know, nothing is guaranteed. You know, all I care about is, what's he going to do on the court? Can we get a three-peat? You know, that sort of stuff. I think that that's what I kind of come back to as well. And it's that we don't know. And people are saying, well, it's already this, or it looks like this. But no, nobody knows. And no one will know. And so this, you know, this is going to cause a lot of people and to miss out on great basketball. That game Kevin Durant played against the Clippers to close out that opening round series was amazing. And instead of spending unnecessary there's a time and a place for a discussion of what's going to happen. You know, I get it to some degree, but it's to the point where, yeah, we're not going to talk about how great he's playing or that he's had a great, I mean, he had a great season. He totally added this new element to his game in terms of being a distributor, being point KD. And yet it's all lost in the shuffle. And it, like, who can, for all this stuff that's nothing, that's tea leaves, that's, you know, it's ether, it's vapor. And so it's focus on what you have in front of you. And just as people who watch basketball, enjoy basketball, care about the Warriors, root for the Warriors, focus on what's in front of you. And I see a great player who's played great when his team has needed it. Case in point, game 6 against the Clippers. Let's appreciate that. And the summer will be the summer. He could stay. He could go. You know, and things can happen. But until then, focus on what's in front of you.
Absolutely. And especially with right now being what's in front of us, a team that most people would say is the biggest threat in the Western Conference, if not the entire league. And of course, we spent the first 10 minutes of this podcast completely trashing them just because, you know, it's fun to do. But at the same time, I do respect the level of force the Rockets can bring. Like, they're not going to roll over. Like, they're going to come. They're hungry. And because they're hungry, I want Kevin Durant to serve them up something they can really take home back to Houston, something really delicious, like this boot down their throats. You know what I'm saying? So let's go ahead and get it on. Now, moving on to the rest of the second round, we've got a couple interesting matchups kicking off, especially in the East. Now, Sixers, Raptors, Bucks, Celtics. Those are the 4 teams that pretty much everyone thought was going to be here, and they are here. And depending on who you talk to, either one of those teams is a possible dethroner of the Warriors. Now, looking at the Philly Raptors matchup real quick, who you got winning that and how many games?
I'm leaning towards the Raptors in, we'll say, six. How about that? I think they're probably the team. The Raptors are probably the team that I mean, it's tied with Houston just because, you know, Houston, there's this history and we just know they're so sort of focused on the Warriors. But outside of the Rockets, the Raptors are the team where I look at them and I think, okay, that's a real challenge. That is a tough team that will make the Warriors work and make things very difficult for them. And so I think they're very good. And so I think that especially with Embiid, his knee, we don't know how healthy it is, how healthy he'll be. I lean towards the Raptors and I always end up defaulting to six games, but I think six games.
I can dig that. You know, what's funny. I feel like with Warriors fans, there's a certain level of respect we have for a lot of these contenders that we just don't have for the Rockets. That doesn't have much to do with the way they play as far as like their ability, but rather the fact that they're led by Harden and Chris Paul, two of the most floppiest dudes in the history of the game. I think that kind of colors how we feel like there's no way we're going to lose to a bunch of, you know, scam artists. Like, it's not going to happen.
It's a Ponzi scheme of basketball.
It's a Ponzi scheme. But going back to Sixers versus Raptors, I would love for Philly to shock the world, go in there in Toronto and, you know, lay the smackdown. But there's something about that Simmons guy that just kind of leads me to believe that in 2019, if you're a point guard who can't or won't even shoot from outside 6 feet, your team's probably going to be in trouble, especially when you have a giant down low. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like, yeah, Embiid is like, you know, Brook Lopez, Splash Mountain, hanging out in the 3-point line. Like, Embiid's down there like, yo, feed me the rock. And Simmons is like, well, I'm crashing down in the paint at 1,000 miles per hour. I hope you can catch this, like, this pocket pass in traffic and finish. It's like, I don't think you can win a championship like that in 2019. You know what I mean?
When Kyle Lowry and the former Raptor, DeMar DeRozan, are looking at you and saying, yo, you can move back a little bit and shoot it a little further back, you know, okay, you might not have a place in the current NBA.
Right, exactly. Going on to Bucks versus Celtics, I'm just going to go out and say that if the Bucks don't beat the Celtics in five games or less, I'm not going to be as afraid of them. Like, if it's a close series, if it's a close series and like Giannis gets really like, you know, tested, I'm going to be like, maybe the Bucks aren't that good, because although on paper, Boston, you know, is a machine, we've seen a lot of chemistry issues. And that was probably the worst 4-game sweep against the Patriots I've ever seen in my life. Like, this team has tremendous holes. Why can't they score? They have all these quote unquote scores, but can't score. If Milwaukee can't just, you know, give them the business, I'm going to question Milwaukee's ability to stop us.
Yeah, I want to somehow, some way pick the Celtics just to be a contrarian, because another player I do really like is Giannis. He's amazing. And I also will give a shout out to, I've got a good friend of mine who, a poet named Kaveh Akbar, who is a big Bucks fan. So I'm always kind of like, oh, I'd like to see them do well, because he's a really nice
guy.
Did
you just name drop on the podcast? Okay, Tom, I see you.
I'm well connected to, you know, the big time Milwaukee Bucks fandom, but so like I say, I'm torn, but I'm of the mind you are, that I think that the Bucks should probably take care, as much as, you know, Kyrie is a great player, and we're all a little traumatized by him, and I think that goes into how a lot of Warriors fans regard Kyrie, but. I think that I just, you know, Gordon Hayward, is he giving you anything consistently? I'm not as big an Al Horford fan as some people. I don't know, like, if he can make the difference. Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown still seem a little ways away in terms of their development. So yeah, I think the Bucks in five, and if it goes on longer than that, it could could raise some questions,
right,
about where they're at.
Now, for the at the time of this taping, we don't know who's going to win the Spurs or Nuggets yet. That's tape. It's going like an hour or two. Who do you got winning Spurs Nuggets? First of all, yeah. Listeners, if you didn't know, Dr. Tom and I have I wouldn't call it a bias, but there's something about when you're led by a center that continues to drop the ball in big games. Although he did come up huge in that game six loss, he did ball out. I just feel like,
wait, what was the game six, and then what was the last word there? I couldn't hear that.
Lost by 20 points. So.
Yeah. Oh, see, that's interesting. That's very interesting.
I'm just saying, for our homeboy Brady, depending on who were to win this series, I guess my question is, who would Portland rather face?
I'd say the Spurs, just because each of these things I've talked about, you know, the players I respect, but I think Greg Popovich is the coach of all coaches. He's the greatest. And like, he could take the high school varsity team and probably get him into the playoffs. I just sort of have that faith in that man. And so, but with that said, I think that Dame could just do to them, maybe not the same way, but kind of give them the business the same way he did to Mr. Westbrook, Mr. Next Question. And so I think they probably see it in that way. I push back against that and say, that's it. You're matching up against one of the greatest coaches and sort of practical masterminds of NBA history. So maybe you should be careful what you wish for. But I think Portland, they probably want the Spurs. That would just be my
guess. I can dig that. I mean, I feel like either way, Dame Dalla is showing that he's ready to put the team on his back. And my boy CJ McCollum is playing a lot better. So I think in either case, Portland would feel pretty good about the matchup. Going tomorrow, I guess I'm not sure when we're airing this, but it's tomorrow for us right now. Game one, Warriors versus Rockets. The Rockets have already been, sleeping in our beds, hanging out in the Bay Area disrespectfully until we come home. And so now we've got game one here. What are your predictions for game one?
I think that, you hear a lot of the Clippers took them to six games. The Warriors are worn out. They're exhausted. I'm of the mind that this might end up, I don't know if the word is to say to help them, but that they're when they're a little ragged, they have to be more focused. And when they're a little tired, they have to focus a little bit more. And I could, I remember at the end of the regular season this year, they played that game in San Antonio where they just kind of couldn't make a three. They lost the game. Then they played, it was a back-to-back. They had to travel to Minnesota. And everybody said, you watch, they're going to lose this game too. They're tired. And it was like, it'd be understandable. And they came out and they played really well. I wouldn't be surprised if that kind of thing happens. If they're like, okay, we just had this test. We're a little drained, but because of that, we're a little more focused. And so that they would come out and play a solid, focused, complete game and get a win in game one. I remember I was surprised last year when they went to Houston in game one and picked up the win, and it kind of, maybe it wasn't the same situation, but there's something that's kind of like that where I can see, okay, if they're feeling a little back against the wall, a little bit less energy, that kind of snaps them into focus almost. So I'm going to be optimistic and say that element is going to give the Warriors that hunger and that they'll pick up win the first game of the series.
Right. I can dig that. And I think I feel much the same way. Although I do think it's fascinating now with the dynamic the Warriors have at Oracle, where they come out so sleepy early on and then try to hit a flurry of threes to save it at the end, which has been kind of consistent. It almost feels like, the Warriors just have it on their bulletin board first to four wins, and they don't really care when they get the four or how they get the four. They just know they're going to get the four. And so at this point, like, I feel in my gut they're probably going to win just because they're tired of the noise that happens when they lose. But at the same time, I don't think they're like, oh my gosh, if we don't win game one, we're in trouble. I think they're like, yeah, we might lose game one and win the next four. Like, who cares? So it's weird dealing with a team that has had so much success and conquered so much adversity. It's really hard to judge them on the scale like you would, like, say, the Boston Celtics or the Milwaukee Bucks, where, like, you lose game one at home, it's like, oh my God, they're frauds. Like, with us, it's like, yeah, we'll just go and win two on the road. So it's really hard to pick this team, except you always know when it counts, they're going to show up. And especially when their backs are against the wall, as you said, each time it feels like people are like, this team is trash, I can't believe in this number one seed, they come out and just blow the doors off somebody, which is just hilarious to me.
Yeah, this isn't based in anything, but there's this, I like to look back on kind of NBA history and kind of find certain parallels that help me think about things. And for some reason, I've been thinking a lot about the 2013 playoffs. And I was thinking about how in the second round, that was when we played the Spurs and we pushed them to six games. And, you know, we were up big in game one, and everybody's favorite podcast host, Richard Jefferson, choked it away. I remember, you know, the game went to six, and then they played the Memphis Grizzlies in the conference finals. And I remember thinking, oh, that was a very sort of peak grit and grind team. I thought, oh man, they're going to Memphis could get to the finals because the Spurs didn't look so great against the Warriors, and there are these holes, and then the Spurs swept them. And so that's the way I see it. And that's kind of that's what happens when you're when you win multiple championships and you have a culture. You don't just have good teams. You have a kind of an environment that is good and resilient. And so that's what's kind of is in the back of my mind as I look at this series, is stuff like that, where I'm like, okay, I've seen this before, where you say, oh, they're depleted. They had a tough series against an inferior team, whatever. And then it's like, then the next round, it's like, oh, they blew through them. It was total domination. And so I think you're right. And I think they've earned that right to say, well, if we drop, you know, I mean, going back to those Clippers series, you know, the 30 things you shouldn't have to say specifically, but yes, blowing a 31 point lead, you shouldn't do that. But I think, you know, game five, you have a game where the shots don't fall, some things go like that happens. And, but if you're, you know, you're a team that's won championships and won God knows how many games, you've earned the right to say, well, this is just one of those nights. We'll get him next time. Kevin Durant had a quote that I can't remember exactly what it was that basically said that about that game five. He's like, that happens, and we get them the next night, and they did.
Yeah, the Warriors are known to get guys on the next night for some reason. I guess that's how you win, you know, three out of four championships.
Yeah.
Well, I think that about sums it up for us on this trip. Hopefully the next time we talk, the Warriors are in better health and have at least a game one victory in hand. Thank you all for listening. This has been Dr. Tom and the Gold-Blooded King, Daniel Hardy. Tommy B, any closing words for the hopeful members of Dub Nation?
Just sit back and enjoy the ride and enjoy watching these great and talented players play some great basketball, because that's what I'm expecting to watch.
And stop calling for Katie to leave on Twitter, you ungrateful heathens. Are you kidding me? Gosh.
Amen. Amen.
All right, Tom. I will catch you on the flip side. This has been For Golden State of Mind. You're two... what's the word I'm looking for? Biggest Houston Rocket detractors on the planet, Tom and Dan. Thank you so much for listening. Have a great one.